Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Joined now by Saran Petro, host of the program weekdays, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Saran, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Wade. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm gonna bust out a question on you. I would hope you know the answer, but this is a pretty big day. And for some reason, I remember this better than my own kids' birthdays, which tells me I'm a horrible, horrible person. But as I drove to work today, I realized it was May 15th. You do know whose birthday is today, right?
May 15th. Oh, wow. You're putting me on the spot.
I know.
May 15th. Yep. A birthday today.
Popular player.
So it's a sports birthday.
Yes.
Popular player.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's Lucas Duda's birthday. The man who threw wild to home so that Eric Hosmer could complete his dash. And send the Royals to a World Championship parade.
Well, if it is, I'll go with that. I have no idea when his birthday is. But there is a guy that played third base and later on his career first base for the Royals that some people may know pretty well. Maybe
Bill Pecota?
Yeah, Bill Pecota. Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. Kevin Seitzer. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, George Brett's birthday. I can't believe he's 65. That blows me away.
Yeah. Not yet. Listen. Time stops for no one, or yield for no one. Can't remember what that phrase is, but yeah, we're all getting older, you know. We're all one day closer to the end, but yeah, that's right. Happy birthday to George Brett. So, if you haven't, on his birthday is a good day to go take a look at his numbers, go to baseballreference.com, and just enjoy all the black ink, all the led the league.
Yes.
Numbers that are in there, and that's how they signify that you led the league, is it's bold faced, and you'll realize just how great George Brett was. Number one, his numbers stand up to the game today, but then when you see the black ink and how many different things he was leading the league in, and for how long he was doing it, you'll understand just how great a player he was.
And it'd be amazing how great those numbers would be. He missed a lot of games due to injury too, but he always played the game hard, and that's one thing I always respected, and that's why he was my favorite baseball player growing up. Was he played hard, he played with passion, and he was just a terrific ball player and a leader as well, and also a World Series champion back in 1985, which leads me into the Royals. That's where I want to start with you, Saran. Saran Petro of 810 WHB, our guest today. Royals off to a rough start. I think a lot of people knew that it was going to be a tough year for the Royals going in. I don't know if people forecasted this. Certainly, there were a few bad breaks. Salvi, you know, carrying his luggage. Bonifacio suspended. But I think we all knew going into this season and probably for the next couple of years that the minor league system, the kids down there are not ready to play at the big league level quite yet. Thus, the Royals went with some short-term deals with various players, and this is where the Royals stand right now, 13-28.
Yeah, they do. And, Kuzma saying the numbers at 40 game and 41 through the same is a quarter poll for the season, so we always like to do a lot of breakdowns. And Curtis has been tracking, since the Royals got off to such a slow start, how teams had done when they were 7-14, and, every single one that was exactly that. And there was always one playoff team. You know, there was a couple of winning teams. And we long ago left that in the dust. There are no longer any teams that were sitting where the Royals are right now at 13-27 that made the playoffs. There are no teams that had a winning record. And the 40-game mark is where Dave Moore's always said he really takes an inventory of the team and really begins to evaluate. He says you need 40 games under your belt, and then you can look and say, okay, what do we have here? So, Dave Moore's taking that look. And I think the reality is, and while we got a little bit of a tease, right, through 35 games, the Royals had just beaten the Baltimore Orioles with a 10-run first inning, and we're only five games back of the Cleveland Indians. And everybody was still saying, listen, my head tells me it's not going to happen, right? Get this out of your head.
Right.
They're rebuilding. It's not. But my heart is saying, listen, finish off a sweep of the Orioles. They're the worst team in baseball at that time, lowest scoring team in baseball, and then go into Cleveland, take two out of three head-to-head. Maybe you're looking at three games back, maybe even two games back of the Indians after that series. Well, it didn't happen. They dropped the last two to the Orioles, go 1-2 in Cleveland. And the one thing it did do was solidify what their course is. It is rebuilding time. And for me, that should take some stress off the fans, because I don't think ownership can in any way, shape, or form even begin to say that this team is anything other than a rebuilding franchise. So the course is set. Lucas Duda hits the DL. I think you're going to see a lot of veteran guys. Anybody who's got any kind of soreness is going to hit the DL, and young guys are going to get a chance, like we saw at Hunter Dozier last night as he came up and was in the lineup.
When we look at the Royals and the 1 year deals, you know, Moustakas off to a really good start. Kelvin Herrera is going to be trade bait, you would imagine. How active do you see the Royals being? And I know a lot of people talk about the trade deadline. I would say, you know, you can start trading any point in time if you want. How much of a demand do you think will be out there for guys like a Lucas Duda? Of course, it won't help if he's on the DL. John Jay, who could maybe be a fourth or fifth outfielder for somebody, experienced guy. Kelvin Herrera, Mike Moustakas, or maybe other pieces that the Royals can move to try to speed up the rebuild and replenish their farm system.
So I think there's two things to what you said there. I think you are right. Listen, you can trade whenever. So if there's a team out there that has the need, the one thing I don't want to hear from Dayton Moore is, well, you know, we're always ready to answer the phone. We're always willing to listen. This is the time where Dayton Moore's got to be the guy calling.
Yeah.
He's got to do the talking. He's got to do some selling. He's got to do some constructing of trades. He's got to be the guy that gets creative, finds the third team to get the final piece that somebody else needs in a package to make it work to get prospects back. So I'm with you. Now, listen, if nobody has a need and nobody wants a deal, it does take a team on the other side. But Dayton Moore is going to have to be creative. He's going to have to be aggressive and can't just sit back and wait for people to call him. If he's got an idea or he thinks he can make the other club better and get something he wants, then he better act on it because it's a different time right now for the Royals. But that being said, I do think they're in a spot where they really can do no wrong. There is nobody, none of these guys that we're talking about that are in the final year anyway, there's nobody that's going to get a qualifying offer, and Mike Moustakas is not eligible
right.
for the qualifying offer. Once you've had it once, you can't get it again. So it doesn't matter. No one's going to get a $50 million deal, and I think there's another threshold for a second-round pick at like $25 or $30 million. I don't know that anybody that we're talking about here is going to get that. Maybe sort of Kelvin Herrera. He continues to have a great season, but second-round picks are not better than what the prospects are you can generally get. Now, I will say this. Rental players don't bring a lot back, and if you can get any kind of building block pieces out of rental players, you've really done something. And so we're going to watch, and I think all of those guys should be traded. Every single name that you mentioned there should be traded with the lone exception of maybe Kelvin Herrera if they say they want the draft pick instead. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe Kelvin Herrera in this era where relievers are getting bigger contracts, if he would have a lights-out season, maybe he could get a $50 million deal, a four-year $60 million or four-year $50 million deal. I suppose isn't out of the realm of possibility. I wouldn't give it to a 5'11 power pitcher, but
no.
You know, maybe somebody else will. But I think John Jay is a good ball player. In fact, I think he's a little more than a fourth or fifth outfielder. I think he's a legitimate starting outfielder. If you're a team, though, that's lost a guy to injury, having a guy who's going to give you a professional at bat, a career 355 on base percentage, that can play center and does play left very well, I think that's a valuable commodity. So I think you watch the contenders who lose an outfielder. I mean, the Royals in 15. You know, John Jay would have been a guy who, if Ben Zobrist wasn't there, would have been a good fit to go play left field when Alex Gordon was down.
Yeah.
I think teams will have an interest in him. Duda's kind of a pinch hitter, platoon, first base DH type for anybody that's out there. Mike Moustakas is a guy that I think maybe you don't want to deal with his attitude, which was said to be a problem during this offseason and why he didn't get as much interest as he certainly thought he was going to get. Scott Boras thought he should have gotten. Listen, you're renting him for a year, and the guy's got pop. If you need power, I can think of a team like the Cleveland Indians. I talked to my guy, Munch Bishop, in Cleveland yesterday, and he said the Indians had interest in the offseason. And right now, Jason Kipnis isn't hitting. And they can move Jose Ramirez to second. That opens up third base for Mike Moustakas, the DH spot in the American League, if you need a power bat. I definitely think he's going to be somewhere come August 1st. So, you know, are you going to get Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar and Jake Odorizzi out of any of these guys? No, absolutely not. If you want to produce one of those deals, you're going to have to move Salvador Perez, or Danny Duffy's going to have to start pitching a lot better, and you're going to have to move him. But there are pieces, at least maybe bullpen pieces, long shot live arms. There are pieces that can be acquired at this time of year.
You mentioned Danny Duffy. That's where I was going to go next. He has said it himself. He's been awful. He was awful the other day. You know, Ned always says, you know, good stuff. Ned always protects his players, and I respect that. Of course, if we all had the answers, Duffy would have it figured out more than likely. But what are some theories on that you have as to why Duffy's been struggling so much this year?
You know, listen, he had the shoulder injury right before, or the tightness in his shoulder right before the season began. So I think we've got to wonder, is he healthy? The velocity's off a little bit, but he still shows the ability to get the fastball up there over 95 miles per hour. So is that kind of a conscious choice? Is that a problem with his delivery? Is it mechanics? I don't know. You know, Jason Stark I talked to this morning, and he said that he was talking to some scouts, and their view of it is it's a problem within the year, between the years. And, you know, Danny Duffy's kind of battled himself a lot throughout his career with a lot of different things, on and off the field. So that certainly makes sense. He's got a different pitching coach. I mean, I think Dave Island's one of the best in the business, and he clearly clicked with Dave Island. It's not to say Cal Eldred won't ultimately be good for Danny Duffy or won't be great for other players. He certainly seems to be very good for Eric Skoglund here over the last four starts. And is him doing a pretty good job of handling a couple of Rule 5 pitchers as well. But, you know, right now, I think it's a lot of things. I think Danny Duffy is a guy that needs a lot of things to line up and be right for him to be effective. And I think now at this age, we can say that. There isn't going to be a time where Danny Duffy just locks in for 3 or 4 years and throws BBs. It's always going to be somewhat of a volatile situation. And it's a combination of his mental state. It's a combination of his mechanics. I mean, we've seen him in one game. He was wild both high and low. And that's a guy who can't find his release point. So there's clearly mechanical issues. He's working on things. He's worried about tipping pitches, stretch, wind up. That's just too much. Listen, at this point, he should be settling in and finding some consistency. And he's really a guy who has never had any consistency in his career until maybe the last couple of years with Dave Island and pitching out of the stretch. And now that's clearly been disrupted. It's not a great mark on Cal Eldred's resume as the pitching coach. That's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of clutter in his head right now. I know he wants to figure it out, and sometimes it takes a while. We've seen Alex Gordon maybe figure some things out after basically a 2.5 year slump. Soren Petrov, 810 WHB in Kansas City, our guest today, host of the program from 10 to 2 weekdays there in Kansas City. Let's shift to the Chiefs. The Chiefs offseason pretty active. You trade Marcus Peters, Alex Smith traded, give the keys to Patrick Mahomes, cut bait with Derek Johnson, Tom Bali, among others, Ron Parker, another. New offensive coordinator. You keep your defensive coordinator. Of all the things the Chiefs did this offseason, I'm cool with everything they've done, quite honestly. I don't have major qualms or arguments about what they've done. The one that I still am not feel great about is Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator. What were your feelings on the moves the Chiefs made this offseason?
Well, and I'm with you. I mean, I think most of us expected there to be a change at defensive coordinator, and you think back to the great offenses that the Chiefs had under Dick Vermeil and how long Dick Vermeil stuck with Greg Robinson and just saying he's a good coach. And listen, he's a better coach than the numbers would tell you. They kept missing on personnel decisions. They never could find good defensive linemen using high picks on Ryan Sims, Eddie Freeman, Junior Seavey. And none of those guys could really play at a high level. And that ultimately doomed Greg Robinson. Who knows? If he'd had a wrecking crew defensive line, maybe his schemes would have worked. They were trash with what he had to work with. And Dick Vermeil stayed the course too long with him. And you absolutely have to wonder aloud if that's what happened with Andy Reid. And Andy Reid's defensive nature about it shows that he's aware of it, and he knows. He had to have given it some thought. So, I don't know what goes on in their meeting rooms, and so I don't know what isn't being carried out or executed by the players. I know this. If you do stay the course with Bob Sutton, you better not stay the course with your personnel.
Yes.
If it's not Bob Sutton, then it's the players. It's one or the other. And to the Chiefs' credit, now with the old, Derek Johnson getting older up there, doesn't have the same kind of explosion, not making the plays in the backfield last year like he did in the past. Marcus Peters, yes, turnover machine, but I find it hard to believe that Marcus Peters can be in a position where he is consistently making mistakes off the field and think that he's always doing everything right on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So I am at least open to the concept of, while Marcus Peters did create a lot of turnovers, that there are a lot of times you saw Marcus Peters jawing with the safety like it was somebody's fault. There was a missed coverage. And he was one of those guys that seemed to me, I remember when I played sports, whoever barked the loudest about whose man was that's not my guy, that was always the guy whose man it was.
Yes.
And he did more of that than anyone else. He didn't tackle. There was a lot of that. You have to wonder, was he not schematically sound to where they had to eliminate part of their defensive playbook? Is there a different style of defense Bob Sutton wanted to play? But if you're going to play with Marcus Peters out there, you only had to play a certain way. And now we're going to see a full package of schematic game plan. I don't know. I'm just giving you possibilities
sure.
of why they stayed the course with Bob Sutton. So they make those changes. Ron Parker's out. And then they get free agency. They do go address middle linebacker with Anthony Hitchens. And they use virtually almost their entire draft on the defensive side of the ball. So will it work? I don't know. Listen, if they're 25th or 24th, I don't want to hear about how they got a little bit better. That's irrelevant. That's an irrelevant improvement. That may just be how the clock ticked or a better running game or whatever the case may be on the other side of the ball. They need to make at least 10 spots. They need to get into the top 20, and I say into the top half, for me to believe that they have actually fixed anything, because three or four spots defensively is nothing. It happens all the time. Teams have, over the course of time, and I don't remember the number, I think it's like three times they've gone from the bottom five to the top five in the NFL, and it's like 30-some-odd times they've gone from the bottom 10 to the top 10. So there is no reason to accept anything other than the top 16 spots defensively, or Bob Sutton should go. They've invested in guys that they say are going to fit, and some of them you kind of scratch your head and wonder how it's going to work. Speaks being a guy that's going to play outside linebacker, and that doesn't really look like what his body type is, but that's their plan. They at least have gone out and changed the personnel. If they're going to keep the guy, okay, then change the personnel, and they have done that. And now there will be no more excuses for Bob Sutton whatsoever.
How concerned are you? I mean, the Chiefs, it made sense to address the defensive side of the ball. I still worry about stopping the run, worry about getting a pass rush. Of course, part of that's with health, with Justin Houston, D Ford being healthy, so forth and so on. I'm still worried in the secondary. I mean, Eric Berry, can we just assume he's going to be, you know, like the player he was before the injury last year? At corner, you've got Kendall Fuller, and I know the stats bear out that he was one of the top slot corners, but he's not going to be a slot corner now. He's going to be, you know, supposedly their number one corner replacing Marcus Peters, so that's going to be a different role. They signed Hamerson offseason to fill a spot. Steven Nelson, who didn't play very well last year for the most part. How concerned are you with the secondary of the Chiefs?
I get the concern. I would feel worse if the Chiefs didn't go out and hold the Raiders, who I know weren't as good offensively as they were the year before, but still had good weapons. They didn't hold the Raiders to just over 100 yards in total offense on the game they played when Marcus Peters was suspended.
Right.
That, to me, is what opens the possibility that the problem, Marcus Peters was as much a part of the problem as he was a solution with his turnovers. And when I saw that game, I went, well, okay. Listen, they didn't miss him. Add in a piece like Kendall Fuller, I think you get better. I think Steven Nelson's got some ability. I do think scheme is important. I do think keeping your responsibilities are important. And so I am not as concerned as others. Whatever everyone else's concern is, 7 on a 10-point scale, 5, put me 2 notches lower than everyone else. I think they've got to get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
And more of it. Justin Houston, if D4 can be healthy, which he probably won't be, but when he's healthy, can apply pressure. And if Speaks can be a guy that gives him, you know, some pressure on the early downs, if Chris Jones can take a step, if they can get that done up front with that front 7, and along with Eric Berry's ability to steady things back there, I think the personnel is potentially a lot better and could make it better in coverage. Quicker you get to the quarterback, less time you got to cover, right? Longer you cover, more time you got to get to the quarterback. It goes hand in hand, but I think they've addressed some things up front that should hopefully take some pressure off the back end. And I think we do need to keep in mind, every time Eric Berry, this is the first time the Chiefs have made the playoffs when Eric Berry was out. In the past, when he'd been out, it really doomed the Kansas City Chiefs. And so they at least made the playoffs without him. But it has proven the three major times that he's been out that it is a significant downgrade to the defense and the playoff ability of the Kansas City Chiefs. Him being back and hopefully healthy for 16 games will make a major difference.
Any draft pick the Chiefs made that you think will have a significant impact on the team this year?
Yeah, in fact, I think several. Speaks is going to play. I think he's going to be the starting outside linebacker on the right side. I think they're done messing around with D Ford and his inability to stop the run, so I think he'll play and maybe shift in, it sounds like, to the inside on passing downs. But I think he's going to play. I think Nadi is going to be the starting nose tackle. Coming out, I think they love his ability and feel like they got a steal. That's why they traded up to get him. And I think Watts, the fourth-round safety out of A&M, I think he's got a great chance to be the starting safety next to Eric Berry. So, yeah, I think all three of those guys have a great chance to really make an impact as starters. And I think you can see the other guys contribute on special teams. I know they like the upside of McKenzie, I know athletically they feel like he's a first-round or at least top of the guard board athletically at that position. If he had been a guard all along, that's his upside, that he physically fills the charts the way you would like a guard that might be the top-rated guard in a draft. He just hasn't played that position, and is frankly underachieved. He's one of the top recruits in the country coming out as a defensive lineman, but they think his body type projects out more to the offensive line. I don't know that he's going to be the guy this year. I think he's the project, but I think he's the guy that they think could be the answer over there at left guard in the long run. But, I think I'd be surprised if you don't get at least two and probably three starters out of this draft.
Completely changing gears here before I let you go, and before we get to the off-the-wall question, Saran, you're certainly more in the know on this than I am. You know a lot more about sports betting. Of course, the ruling by the Supreme Court yesterday opening the door for states to legalize gambling on sports. Just kind of in a quick nutshell, and I know it's tough to do because it's pretty complicated to some anyway. Your thoughts on that ruling, and what do you think that will do or have an impact, say, in the state of Missouri or Kansas?
You know, I think it'll be positive. Number one, it's tax revenue. It's business that's being done right now that is not taxed.
Yeah.
And I think it's time for the government to get their head out of their backside, where it's been for a long time. And a lot of things that their constituents, the people, the citizens of these states, this country, have said, listen, I have no moral problem with it, and I'm going to do this business. You know, you may not agree with me, but gambling, nobody has a problem with it. And so the estimates are anywhere from $150 to $200 billion worth of commerce has gone on in this country untaxed. That's ignorance for allowing that to happen. It's something you can't regulate. The people don't want it regulated. So, or at least it's something you can't police, something you can't stop. People don't want it stopped. So why not regulate it, tax it, and generate revenue? I think, number one, it'll be good. Now it's up to our politicians to go out and actually use the money wisely. That's always a question.
Yes.
That we have sitting there. But I think overall for sports it'll be good. I think it'll generate interest. Listen, I talk about having more than a rooting interest in a game. And I'm always referencing gambling when I'm talking about that. There's no doubt one of the most important things to the rise of the NFL as the number one sport in this country is gambling. Whether that's mild gambling in fantasy football terms or whether that's hardcore betting on sports. If you've got more than a rooting interest, if you have hard-earned money, whether it's $5, $10, or $5,000, you're going to watch that game. So it's going to increase the revenue, the advertising revenue for the sports. It's going to open up a whole new product category for the advertising industry. I think it's good for us in our business because I think people will now want to advertise on sporting events. Come bet on those sporting events. Come to us. You know, I think there's more than just the wager money that it's going to kickstart the economy. You know, it was a big category line. You and I, when we worked together, Wade, back in the day, the offshore casinos were seen as quote-unquote legal. And
right.
That was a big product line.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of advertising dollars spent on that. Not to mention, if more people go to the casinos, you need more servers to bring them food, give them drinks. I think it has the potential, not to change the country, but to add to the overall economy of any state that legalizes it. So I think it'll be positive. As far as worrying about the games being corrupted because of it, listen, the people who police the games are the casinos. It will be closer watch if all the money is in the hands of the people who can actually affect change. All of the point shaving scandals have always been found out by the casinos, and they're the ones that have put a stop to it. If all the money changes hands legally, we got a better chance of there being an honest game than we have right now with $100+ billion unaccounted for, and that's being used to potentially influence the outcome of the game. So I think it's a positive all around.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Saran Petrov, 810 WHBR, our guest today. Thanks for the time, as always, buddy. Yesterday was National Dance Like a Chicken Day. I'm sure you guys celebrated that there at 810 in the studios. But what dance, I know you love to dance. What dance do you enjoy or despise the most? What dance do you enjoy or despise the most? Could be as a viewer or could be as a participant.
Yeah. The question is moot because I don't dance.
Okay, right.
Right? So, at my age,
yes.
But I will tell you this. The chicken dance, which is loved by many, was absolutely outlawed and banned at my wedding. My wife was going to have no part of the chicken dance. The DJ was expressly told, you will not play the chicken dance or you will not be paid. So I would say that's the only one that I would actually say that I've got any thoughts on, is that it was forbidden at my wedding.
You and your wife agreed on that?
The didn't matter. I mean, she's that's
what.
What do you make joke?
No. I'm saying that that's where you say yes, dear. So she's the one that was all for it, because the reason I say this is our news director said at his wedding he didn't want the chicken dance, but apparently his significant other or fiance at the time, whatever, maybe kind of did. And he said it was played not once, but three times, and he couldn't stand it. So it's good that your wife, ran with it and said, this is not happening on our watch. And you said, yes, dear.
Yes. Now, listen, I had no say. I did what I was told. All I wanted was black cups. But 15 years from now, what the hell was I thinking? That's all I wanted. Classic JFK tuxes. And I got that, and that's all I
need. Yeah, you're happy. That's the important thing. Happy wife, happy life. You know that.
That's right.
Hey, thanks for the time, as always, buddy, and let everybody know how they can hear you out there in Kansas City.
Yeah, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, and our 810 mobile app as well. You can download it or listen to us online at 810WHB.com, and follow me on Twitter at SorenPetro, SorenPetro.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, man.
Always my pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me.